Dark Wings.
Dark Words.
The Game of Thrones Podcast.
Season 5, Episode 3.
High Sparrow.
And we're back. Host Chuck Davis, and with me this week are
Craig McCallie,
Mike Argert,
Kat King.
All right, Chris is otherwise engaged, but we'll return
probably
one of these times, yeah. Most likely.
A vote. I demand a vote. No, not really.
Oh, because
I'm going to be like Master Aim and cast mine after you guys already know, so I can just sway it at the very end.
It'll just turn into a fun little craft project where we create the little rods and the tokens and
ooh yeah.
Yeah. All for four votes.
Put it on Etsy.
Well, speaking of the vote at the wall, let's kinda start with that part of the story. We've got John as the new Lord Commander, and he has appointed what's the young boy's name? Ollie?
Yeah, Ollie.
Sure.
Ollie. It's Ollie.
Ollie is his steward. Who will learn from watching him interacting, and he may himself rule one day, right?
Right.
The steward that killed my girlfriend by Jon Snow.
He's keeping his enemies really close there. Ollie, his greatest enemy.
It's all an elaborate ruse to get him back.
I know it was you, Ollie.
You know, it evoked in the very, very beginning when Ned Stark did that beheading and said to, I think it was Robb Stark at the time, but was Jon Snow there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's like, it was a real watch and learn moment.
Yep.
And
gotta do your own beheadings.
It was almost as if he was in that role and he was demonstrating to his young apprentice.
Because in the book, it's even more like he's not originally going to cut his head off himself. Oh. And then he steps in and is like, no, I have to do this or whatever.
Kind of so, remembers that lesson.
Exactly.
Are you talking about
when he cuts off Jon Slint's head in the book?
Mm. I didn't recall him having done that.
Oh, he definitely.
He definitely has his chance to kill off Slint.
Yep.
The despicable.
Exactly.
Is that really his name? Slint?
Janos Slint.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
I was waiting for this moment in the show. I was like, yeah, he's gonna get it.
But Slint asked for mercy.
Right.
Well, we're into it now. Let's just go
yeah.
for it.
Yeah.
He asked for mercy. He not only did he ask for mercy, he said he would do what was asked him in the first place. And he said, I'm afraid. I've always been afraid.
Hmm.
I mean, he really poured it on.
He really, I guess, humiliated himself.
Yeah.
You know.
Once again.
So John gave him mercy by cutting his head off so he didn't have to be afraid anymore.
But also, what message would John have been sending if he had allowed someone to say, I'm afraid. Oh, okay. Well, in that case, you know.
Right.
Right. That's why Stannis gives him the king's nod of approval.
From one ruthless, imperious ruler to another.
Except that was John's first and only imperious act.
And he did it for all the right reasons, I guess.
It
right.
was honorable, but...
But he doesn't have the satisfaction of knowing that Slint contributed to his own father's death.
Right.
So he's sort of, the significance of that is lost on him.
Right.
I think it was.
But not us as
I
fans.
I think it was too right. much.
You think what was too much?
I think that was too much, man.
Killing Slint?
Yeah.
You think he should have had a lesser?
Yeah, he should have thrown him in jail for some amount of time.
You think they need every man?
Yeah, I guess there's something to that, I guess. You save
them. And again, with that lot, they might mouth off just to get to go to jail to get out of digging piss holes.
But the nature of his defiance was pretty
blatant.
Right. Unforgivable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
in front of everybody, take your command and shove it up your ass.
Unforgivable.
Well, we won't shed any tears over the death of Slint.
Only tears of joy.
How about the exchange that Stannis has in Jon's chambers earlier, and then the one with Davos that follows?
Davos is awesome, man. I think he's my favorite.
He knows what he's doing.
He knows what he's doing, and it's a noble pursuit, and he knows the right thing to say and to motivate people.
So is Davos' conversation going to influence Jon to do something that is his course going to change from the books? From that conversation, so he has the Ollie kid recite the end of the Night's Watch deal, where it talks about protecting the realms of men, mm-hmm. which in the book, John uses that as a way to say, well, our real enemy is not the wildlings. They're in the realm of men. The real things that we have to worry about are the White Walkers who are in the realm of the dead, basically. So,
yeah.
So I feel like they kind of took that and gave that to Davos in this case to say what John kind of says in the book, but ease it to a little different angle as well. So more like we need to, you know, protect the North or whatever instead of, you know, go against the Boltons or whatever instead of.
Right. Yeah. It seems like John and the Night's Watch are the only ones really aware of the supernatural threat of the White Walkers. Like they tried, they sent.
Well, Stannis is aware.
Stannis is aware?
Well, the whole reason he went to the North was because of Melisandre's urging.
No, I thought it was at Davos's suggestion.
Oh, I mean, because they send the ravens out, and Stannis is the only one who responds.
That's right. Yeah, just their call for help, basically. But he didn't go there because, there's White Walkers? I'll put my own concerns aside. And no, he went there, I guess, just to rally support and have an opportunity to do something kingly, right?
Well, and he wanted the wildlings. Yeah, that's the support I think you mean about rallying.
I don't know. Maybe? I think his intent was to basically militarize the Night's Watch and I don't think he really knew that like Jon Snow was there necessarily to kind of try to recruit to help retake the North. And I don't think it had occurred to him that the wildlings would be a resource that he could use. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, yeah, I had the impression he went north to try to command the Night's Watch into joining his army.
In the show, Melisandre, remember when he was at that pivotal point? Well, not being able to remember the book is one thing, but not even being able to remember the show is something else for all of us. Remember when he was at that pivotal point where Davos came back against Melisandre, spoke up, Stannis sentenced him to death, Melisandre was on board with that, and then
she saw some flames.
She looked into the flames once again and basically said, nope, he still has a part to play, spare him. The real threat isn't on Dragonstone or anywhere else. She said it's in the North. Remember? And then that was like a...
Okay.
I feel like that's true.
But that's not Melisandre saying your real job is to fight the White Walkers, because his now concern clearly is to retake the North from the Boltons, or at least as expressed in this episode.
I can't remember how vague she was about why he should go.
Yeah, it's kind of more of a fortune tellery thing of, you know, we have to go to there and see what happens.
We have to go to there.
Yeah. All right, well, so that's kind of cool. Maester Aemon was missing.
Yeah, he was
feeling under the weather.
Yep.
You think they might just kill him off screen?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that guy that was he got sick last week, he's dead now.
I hope not. Well,
I hope not, too.
If they were going to do that to him, they might use some more grandiose method of taking him out to accelerate a plot point or change a plot point or something. They could.
Well, the actor seems pretty elderly and potentially.
They might just kill him off for real.
Come on. What? What? Yeah. This took a weird turn.
We don't really trust that you'll survive enough more episodes for us to utilize you anymore. So.
By that, I'm thinking they might just kill off George R. R. Martin.
Well, I mean, they're certainly killing off huge parts of his story to expedite things.
Right.
Things are moving forward in interesting areas in this episode.
I feel like the only one that's pretty accurate to the book is Arya's storyline at this point.
Yeah, that's right. They haven't messed with that, except for the presence of Jake and Hagar
right.
in the House of Black and White, or White and Black.
There's a character named Hagar.
Jaqen. He's the guy that gave Hagar. The coin to Arya.
Oh, and that's his last name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or that's the alias that he was traveling under when he right. met and was set free by Arya from Harrenhal.
He's really no one, as we...
So he says.
So, yeah. But the thing about the faceless man, I mean, he did the little switcheroo thing where he looked like the elderly man and then just kind of... Mm-hmm.
And we saw that before once, too.
We saw him do the switcheroo. Mm-hmm.
Before when he gives her the coin at the end.
Right.
What did he make himself look like when he left Arya and gave her the coin? Just a nondescript other person.
Just some other white dude, I think. Yeah.
I thought this was the third time when we just saw the season that he'd done it. I thought he had done it one other time. Back before when he was in the killing mood.
Oh, did he assume a different form in order to do one of his killings?
I think so.
I think it was the first time we realized it was introduced to the audience what he was. Why he was such a renowned, good assassin, you know, if he could just waltz in and out of identity.
Yeah, that he wasn't just a guy that's willing to kill to get what he wants. But so, like, it kind of bugs me that Jaqen is there and is the one that is sort of training Arya directly, but it's possible that it's not him.
Right.
It could just be
another faceless man assuming
that identity, a form that would be comforting to her.
Right.
Or, you know. But probably not.
I wish they would have just done someone completely different.
I kind of do too. And I would have liked to see what Jaqen's mission was.
Right.
There's another faceless man on a mission in the books that we get to see, but it's not clear if it was Jaqen or not.
Right.
But we probably won't see that in the show, so it doesn't really matter. But they're moving things along with Arya's training. I still don't know what they do with the bodies after they wash them. They didn't really tell us. I don't think I would like the answer no matter what it is.
I mean, you find out in the book, but... I'm not going to say anything.
Better read those books.
What did you think of that whole thing, like the goings on there in the where Arya's at?
It's really interesting. What I found myself wondering is, what is it that she's actually after? I mean, I know that she has been trying to get away from danger. I know that she wants to avenge her family. She's got her list that keeps getting smaller. I know that he is someone who... kind of, he gave her the coin and promised her refuge and safety, and he has some gift to offer her, but is it that she's going to learn how to become invisible or mutable or face changing, or, you know, what is it? I don't even know if she knows, but I find myself wondering, what is it that she's after? Because she's certainly going down to the core essence of who she is and becoming nothing in order to become something. But there was a little voice in the back of my head that worried, like, oh crap, what if she's just in some Zen cult where now she becomes nothing and she sits on a hill and she's happy forever? And then she's like, dang it, no, this isn't what I wanted. When she was burying Needle, I mean, I was really glad that she didn't throw Needle into the river. I don't know, because it just represents her ability to do the thing that she wants and needs to do. So I find myself wondering, what is she there for? What is it that she's going to transform herself into?
My impression from the end of last season was that she's just has nothing else. She's just kind of desperate for any sort of direction. You know, at least when she was with the Hound, she was a, you know, I won't say quote captive because she was a captive, but she also had plenty of chances to try and escape and never did. So when he died... she was just like, oh, fuck, a Bravosi captain. I have this coin. Like, kind of, you know, maybe she thinks it was more fateful or that sort of thing. But also, I mean, where's she going to go? What else does she have to do? You know, and this whole time, she's always seemed to look up to people that have skills or people that can help her, a teacher.
Yeah.
Whether it was, what was the guy's?
What, the water dancer?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Cereal for Red Little?
Cereal, yeah. So he, and you know, she really palled up with him, the whole thing. And even when Ned was, her dad was still alive, there was one scene where he was kind of like, it's okay. It, you know, you want to do your thing, do your thing. And that was the only buddy, kind of buddy scene that they ever had, and she respected mm-hmm. it. And so then Sirio, and then Jaqen obviously has, wields great power, and she was interested in that. And even the Hound, when they were on the road,
she learned from him.
She learned from him. She respected his power for sure. So maybe she just wants to, you know, be respected.
She wants revenge.
She wants yeah. to check all that's those names she, off her list.
She doesn't want to feel small and helpless. She
well, then is her driving force to become? She saw what an assassin Jaqen, however you say it,
yeah,
was.
She wants to be able to do what he does, okay. so that yeah. she can avenge her family's that was my feeling. Suffering.
Yeah,
because they don't come out and say it, but that makes sense.
But their process is to, you know, break you down so mm-hmm. that you lose your former life, and
right.
then you're sort of a blank slate to take on these assassination jobs. But she, by burying Needle, not giving up Needle, she's holding on to
right.
herself. So so she's going to be fooling them into
believing that she's no one, but
believing that
there's
she's
still
no
a little
one.
That she has no motive,
a little piece of Arya Stark left.
Right. Yeah. So that's cool because we want Arya to come back and kick some ass. But we also want her to be a happy person at some point in her life. So let's talk about her sister.
Oh, boy.
We were wondering what on earth they were going to do with Sansa, where Littlefinger was taking her. And what is going on there? What is Littlefinger up to? What is the message that Cersei sent for him? And, Roose Bolton asked him outright. He's like, you know, you became a lord with the backing of the Lannisters, so why are you up here undermining their position?
Because mm-hmm. Qyburn's writing that note. It's like, make sure he understands.
Immediately. The word immediately.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she wants him probably to come back to King's Landing.
Cersei basically needs to... What was that a reaction to? What triggered... What was it, her meeting with Margaery that sent her down to Qyburn's lair?
I think so.
So Margaery... Or was it after she met the High Sparrow?
Maybe. Yeah. It was after the High Sparrow thing.
So I wonder, what does Cersei want with Littlefinger? Does she want him to go to work for her? Or does she want him to get his comeuppance for helping Sansa escape? Does she know that that's what happened?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
But she knows that he became Lord of the Vale after wedding, and then I guess she doesn't know that he was responsible for Lysa's death, but I'm pretty sure everybody suspects it, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I guess I'm not quite sure what she wanted.
I'm not sure what she wants.
I don't know
there.
That I really have a good answer at this point.
You know, that was a cool moment, though. So Littlefinger basically says, guess what? I'm taking you to marry Ramsay Bolton.
Mm.
And she's like, what the fuck? That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I won't make you do it, but maybe he says that you should avenge your family, right?
You should stop being a bystander and take action to get revenge, basically.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of like the most advanced lesson, you know, mm-hmm. stop being a pawn and mm-hmm. start playing the game.
Yeah.
He said, there's no justice in the world unless we make it. You loved your family. Avenge them. I mean, that's a very strong appeal to justice, and you love them, right? So, I mean, it's very convincing. He really got her. She got back on that horse and said, let's go.
But to what end, really? I mean, she'll be well positioned. She'll be the Lady of Winterfell again. She'll be married to the Lord of the North.
I couldn't help it. I in the back of my mind again, I was like, maybe she will just kill him in his sleep. He'll reveal his true nature to her, and she'll just get rid of him and then be in charge of... I have no idea what will really happen.
That's kind of the idea, right?
He's a bad person.
No, he seems nice.
But Littlefinger...
He does seem nice in this episode.
Littlefinger doesn't really know how bad he is, or he probably might have second thoughts about this scheme.
Oh, it gives me chills.
Because I feel like he's the worst.
But I feel like that's, I mean, you've got Theon there too, or Reek, as he's known now. But...
What's going to happen when they have a moment of recognition? They almost did. She walked past and he looked down. He recognizes her somewhere. Oh, yeah,
he definitely knows her.
Oh, yeah, he's afraid of being recognized, so he's kind of like hiding from her.
Hands down the most tragic character to me. Theon. Slash Reek, yeah.
But don't the Boltons know that Theon and Sansa grew up together?
They do. So you, but as long as Littlefinger's around, Ramsay will be on his best behavior. So he won't be playing any of his Reek games until he's in the clear.
Right.
Maybe not even around his father. But yeah, I'm sure it won't be long before he starts to fuck with Sansa and Reek.
Yeah, he hasn't. He needs to have his Reek playtime where he just completely.
Yeah,
they reminded us.
Completely fucks with him.
They did remind us this episode, I think, because we haven't seen him for a while. How shitty he is! By he's just like, oh yeah, I flayed him. You know, to remind everyone.
Yeah, those mean
bodies. I flayed him alive and made their son
made
watch.
Made their son watch, right? In case you forgot who you're dealing
with. He paid his taxes right up. That's fine.
Roose had to give him like a little correction, basically. You know, our position.
That's not how you win people over.
Yeah. Exactly. Which is what Roose is so good at. but that's cool. So there's a whole new, I mean, Winterfell is a set location again.
Right. It wasn't smoldering.
It wasn't smoldering in the opening.
No, they're rebuilding. I didn't notice that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, stuff is going to happen. I mean, we got to see Moat Cailin was in the opening, but they basically just look at it from a distance, and it's like, you know, Moat Cailin, 'tis a grody place. Let's not go there.
They're not back at Winterfell yet, are they?
Yeah, they are. Aren't they? Or is that meant to be Moat Cailin?
I think that's still on Moat Cailin.
No. It was Winterfell.
No, it's
it
Winterfell.
It felt like Winterfell. When she walked into that room, because it looked familiar.
It wasn't old Nan, but it was some old...
It was an old woman.
Okay. Is that why she said welcome home then? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't
think... I didn't get that jump. Like, I thought they had just... Like, the opening of the gates was them riding into Moat Cailin.
They moved things right along. You know, the message that Cersei tells Qyburn to write has already arrived at Winterfell in the next scene.
Right.
Yeah, things did seem to move fast.
It went from the Eerie to Winterfell. And
I want to say one thing about Moat Cailin before we move on.
Yeah.
I feel like they really trivialized its importance as a route, like the only route. Because when Pod and Brienne were talking, she's like, no, we can't go through that. We'll go around. Pod is like, oh, that'll take us miles out of our way. Like, what if it maybe 10 miles or something? We don't want to do that. It's, if I remember from the books, it was like, it's the absolute only path through that part of the world, period.
Unless you go through the swamp.
Haunted swamps or something. There's like some...
But it seems like, you know, if you looked at it, it didn't really seem like, well, okay, just go left.
Go that way.
Go left like 10 miles, you know, which wouldn't put an army back, but maybe like a half a day or something. It seems like from the book, it was just such an integral, important waypoint, or what am I trying to say? Of
just a strategic, sort of bottleneck.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's going to happen with Pod and Brienne? They're kind of more buddies now.
Yeah.
She's not so angry at him. We kind of get the whole story, which is mostly true to the book, about, you know, her father held the tournament to... you know, find a suitor for her, and then everybody was super nice to her, and then she finds out that it's just, you know, they basically had a bet on it to, like, make her see who could, I forget what it was, win her over or whatever, and then she finds that out, and then you get the Renly thing where she's like, oh.
I guess young men have always been rude.
Yep.
No, it's not just a now thing. It was back then. Forever.
She had a great line when she was talking and kind of telling her story. She said, nothing's more hateful than failing to protect the one you love.
Right. And she basically comes up with her new motivation.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, Stannis Baratheon is
not a shadow. She's going to go after Stannis.
Which she, yeah. it's a realization or a declaration that she never makes in the books, but it is sort of the natural thing. I mean, if she's, you know, basically she had to tell that story to remind us all that she had been devoted to Renly.
Right.
And why she was, so that she has, then she can sort of state her new mission.
How did she make the connection between the shadow and Stannis, though? Did I miss something?
I mean, that was
said,
from
or?
three seasons.
She saw ago. She saw the shadow.
And she was in the tent.
It looked like
Stannis.
The shadow.
Okay.
They didn't really do a good job of depicting that. I think part of the reason she's said it two or three times in the last three or four seasons is because it was it was pretty vague.
Well, the setting, you may remember, was, so Stannis' army and Renly's army meet, and they sort of ride out together, and Stannis is like, come on, stop messing around, I'm going to be the king. Mm-hmm. And Renly's like, no, brother, you stop messing around. I think people would prefer if I was
right.
the king.
Yeah. And he had the larger army.
And so Stannis basically said, if you're going to continue with this, it means war or whatever, like, I'll have to attack you. And so the two brothers were preparing to fight each other on the field of battle. And then that was the night that the Shadow Baby struck. So it was basically, and then immediately thereafter, once Renly was dead, then all of Highgarden and all the support that had gone to Renly just shifted over to Stannis overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Stannis is the one that benefited from Renly's death. It doesn't take a genius to figure out he was responsible.
Plus, the shadow looked like Stannis.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But only Brienne saw that. So only Brienne, would have realized that was what was up. So that's cool. That's interesting. So we know that Brienne and Pod are going to be up in the north pretty soon, too. Looking.
Well, I felt better about Sansa's situation with the world's most terrible person, Ramsay Bolton. Yeah. But I felt better about it thinking ahead to the fact that Brienne would be on scene at some point and rescue her. I don't know.
Yeah, man. That's a good point. Who knows when you got a wild card like that and we're off book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what could happen?
We also did get a shot of the six angry girls when Sansa shows up, when they ride in, which...
So what are those, Ramsay's girlfriends or serving girls or, you know... Like there's that scene when he's torturing Reek. He has some sexy ladies around sort of helping him torture Reek.
And there's a scene with the dogs running in the woods. Mm-hmm. Somehow they're two really bad girls. I don't remember the details, but something really bad
One
happened.
Worse than the other, yeah.
Yeah.
You think, she's pretty. She's prettier than you. Or what was she? The girl was mad that the other girl was thought she was prettier.
But it doesn't surprise me that he has kind of a little clique, if you will. And I think I'm using that term because of the high school girl feeling that had. But I mean that he has his group. He has his followers. He has his.
Well, that's one possible explanation of who those girls are.
Yeah.
But there's some other. Well, I guess
we shouldn't really talk about it, but
there's some other girl characters that are up to no good in Winterfell in the book, so we'll have to see where they go with that.
Right.
What happens, yeah.
So Cersei meets the High Sparrow, doing his good works, which is it's kind of true to the nature of that character, but in the books, the High Sparrow is introduced, like Brienne and Pod encounter him on the road. And they travel with him for a stretch, don't they?
I think that's a different guy.
It wasn't the High Sparrow?
No,
it was just a sparrow. So,
yeah.
Well, okay, so that sort of introduces the whole concept of the sparrow movement.
Right. Whoever the septon is that they show, or the septon that they show at the brothel, like he's already been like killed off or something, like, and then it's up to they're trying to find a new one, and all the septons or whatever elect this High Sparrow guy, and then he kind of takes everything on a different path. It's not Cersei's doing to be like, oh, I want you to.
Well, so Cersei, take their place. Cersei looks like she thinks she's doing something clever,
right?
By, she doesn't do it in this episode, but she makes it pretty clear. She tells the High Sparrow that I threw the former High Septon in the dungeon and appears to basically be saying maybe somebody else needs to step into that role.
Right. Well, in the next week's scenes from next week, wasn't he conscripted in King's Land, or not King's Landing, but in closer to Cersei?
Yeah.
And he's taken over. Maybe he was on a council. I don't even know. It just flashed by for a second, but
I just saw him at the steps of the going up.
Oh, yeah.
They were doing something.
Okay.
So maybe, yeah, just the.
But she comes to him and says, "Well," or in the scenes from next week, it's like, "Well, what if I knew of a certain someone who was, you know, kind of doing the same stuff as the High Septon?"
Oh, right. That's right.
Someone who maybe I had a conversation with, who was calling me the Queen Mother, and
so she wants to put in a new High Septon, who then
is super strict.
And right. Basically, she's playing a long game of get Margaery, right?
Right.
Yep. Maybe not too long. I mean, she went. I think it's pretty clear that direct from that conversation where she was being mocked and ridiculed by.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't being mocked and ridiculed exactly, but that was a very interesting.
Like, she wasn't?
Well, no, not directly. It was all very, very subtly.
Very passive aggressive.
I mean, the message was clear, but it wasn't like the girls weren't like cackling and pointing.
They were exactly cackling at the very end.
They were laughing at Marjorie's joke about Tommen in the sack.
Yeah,
But after she leaves,
yeah, it's implied that the minute she stepped out of the room, that Marjorie said something demeaning about her. And then
when Marjorie turned around and looked like, oh,
right,
oh my, like, oh, we were in trouble, yeah. You know. But yeah, like, clearly we're not, because I'm way more powerful than she is.
Who I don't think there's anything subtle about her.
Well, I guess. I get what you're saying, but I just don't think that Marjorie was just careful to always say the right thing, but imply the wrong thing.
I think Cersei was absolutely seething when she left. I think
Exactly. Okay. Totally. Okay. But I guess I just mean,
because you were talking about motivation. How did we get here? That thing.
Oh yeah, which all started with Marjorie and Tom in bed, and her planting the seed of, why don't you talk your mom into leaving town?
Right.
And which she sees through immediately.
He was pretty ham-fisted.
Yeah. but she knows where it's coming from. I mean, so then she goes to Marjorie, and Marjorie's like, yeah, fucking with her a little bit.
Oh yeah, I mean, like pointing out the virility of her little baby boy. Uh-huh. I mean, she just went right for the jugular, and
you might be the queen grandmother pretty soon.
Do I call you the queen dowager mother? Yeah. What, you know, what? How can I make you sound worse?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the most derogatory term that I can
that I'm allowed to call you, my beloved?
My beloved, kiss, kiss, hug, hug. So good to see you.
So that's a great, that scene is perfect. I mean, and it really is 100% in the spirit of the books. The kind of Cersei versus Marjorie dynamic is great.
And Tommen, a boy grown. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same guy, right?
Yeah.
It's the same kid. Well, he's not a kid anymore. He really grew a lot last year. It was perfect for the role and for the point in the season where he's supposed to be.
Yeah, right? When actually,
or was he younger in the book still?
Probably still younger. Yeah, I think he's like 10 or 11.
Everyone's younger in the book.
I think he was too young to bed down with Marjorie in the books, basically. Yeah. So they were married, and it's like our wedding night is a couple years off. It'll be fun.
I remember when all he wanted to do was just hang out and play with Sir Pounce.
Sir Pounce.
Not anymore.
Yeah, he's definitely more of a kid in the books.
It's a different kind of pouncing that's going on now.
Yeah.
But they snuck another wedding in there real quick, didn't they?
Yeah.
A really quick wedding.
I wasn't expecting that. Okay.
I'm glad they glossed over it that, though, because it's just like...
Because you've been to enough weddings in the last 2 years with these guys?
Right.
Well, and I thought about that, too. I thought, you know, because the soap opera model for weddings is to have all the big buildup, and, oh my gosh, it's a wedding, and everyone gets real excited about it, and the pomp and circumstance.
Well, it's also the first wedding that truly was not eventful. It's pointless to go into any detail with it, right? So why do it?
Because it
right.
was inevitable. Yeah. Like it was just happening. It's
the first wedding that was something no extraordinary one got killed didn't happen.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. And they're really relatively happy. It was kind of nice to see. It's like, you know, this...
Yeah, but she's...
Oh, it's all fake. I mean, she's yeah, but not she's for him. So cunning.
It's sad.
She's so cunning. Yeah.
But he's happy for now. And boy, is he mm-hmm. is he happy. All he wants to do is do this all day long every day.
But I mean, Tommen could be a good king. He should be.
But for the first time, he's now shown to be not innocent, not pure when he starts conniving with his mom. It's the first time we've ever seen him.
Oh, that's a good
not
point.
That he's had a lot of lines, but it's the first time he's starting to be deceptive.
Is he being deceptive, though?
Well, when he's like, oh, mom, don't you love Casterly Rock? Remember how you love Casterly Rock? You like Casterly Rock, so why don't you go to Casterly Rock now?
But I feel like he did it in the most innocent way. I mean, I think he was genuine. I mean, obviously, Margaery planted the seed in his head.
Right.
But it wasn't like, let's get your mom out of here. She didn't say anything like that.
No, his motivation is more like, I'm not a little boy. I don't want you to be coddling me. I mean,
right.
His motivation is pure and
violin.
His motivation is pure. I mean, it's a little bit selfish. It's like, that's right. If with my mom around,
I'm the king now.
Well, but yeah, it's a direct reaction to him. He doesn't want to be mothered or babied anymore. And Margaery was like, well, that's just how it's going to be forever.
But she's really framing it in that way. She's really characterizing it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't feel like he was being devious or deceptive. He was just trying to.
He's just a dumb kid.
He's just. I guess so.
Hard to say. I don't know. We'll see.
But he doesn't understand the ramifications of getting his mom out of the way, other than just it'll help him feel like more of a man.
Right.
With his
right.
mom not around. Right. Which is, you know, every kid. He doesn't know that there are ulterior motives.
Yeah.
Man, his brother was just evil. I like him better because I feel like he's not apt to put arrows through a prostitute.
Indeed not.
Yeah. He just wants to have sex all the time.
Can't fault him.
What do we think about the current High Septons, his little brothel scene? It's kinda,
oh, man.
He's got one prostitute for each of the seven gods.
Hey, whatever he's into.
Hey.
I guess it was, he seemed appropriately debauched in order to suffer the outcome that he gets.
And I think that's probably his outcome is a little foreshadowing for some later stuff.
That he ends up in the dungeon?
Yeah.
For being a sinner?
His, what is the word? He was so indignant, maybe is the word, but he just was like, this can't be, you know, like, he was very offended by everything that happened, and it's just, the hypocrisy there was really ironic.
They did dress him down pretty well. I mean, they marched him.
Oh, they did. It's just, you know, it's just funny that, you know, he got so indignant. And then the High Sparrow said something about hypocrisy is a boil, and lancing a boil is never pleasant. You know, it's just,
mm-hmm.
he's really representing hypocrisy.
Grandmaster Picel was like, like, man's private business should be private.
Because
he got caught.
He got too.
Tyrion. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how when the High Septon is addressing everyone at the table and he doesn't know how to address Qyburn, Qyburn's just like, it's fine. Right. Don't worry about it.
The less people who know who I am, the better.
Right. We got to see Qyburn's monster kicking on the slab.
Yep.
Is that meant to be the mountain or just another project?
I think so. I thought immediately that it was supposed to be the mountain.
It's for sure the mountain.
Okay. Oh. But does that mean the mountain is basically...
He's being Frankensteined.
It's taken a while.
That's my impression.
Well, they don't have a need for him yet, so...
Ooh, it's so creepy.
Qyburnstein.
Qyburnstein.
Mountainstein.
Frankenburn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got Tyrion.
Oh, yeah. We can't...
Tyrion in Volantis.
We almost forgot one of the biggest scenes in the whole show. From the
right. Man. So we get to see another Red Priestess who is a...
Was a former whore because she had a tear.
Oh, the street creature?
That's right. Yeah, they did some good exposition on the nature of the slave trade in Volantis.
Yep.
And we get to see an example of Melisandre's faith in a new context, which is kind of neat. And so she's giving this speech basically telling these slaves that the, how does she refer to Daenerys?
The like queen.
The dragon,
dragon queen.
The dragon queen is going to come save us all, which Tyrion is kind of like, oh, I didn't know we were going to meet a savior or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's neat to think that people that are not in Meereen, like her legend is growing and people want to follow her even though they don't really know what she's about. But I think that's cool. So we get to hear the night is dark and full of terrors, which we haven't heard from Melisandre in a while.
Mm-hmm. What is that from? That sounds so familiar. For the night is dark and full of terrors. That is from some. It evokes something else.
You mean something in,
something other
real,
than
in yeah. real life?
Yeah, it's, is it a prayer?
Are you thinking of the what people think is the post office creed? Neither dark nor
rain nor snow,
nor dark of night will keep us from our point arounds. Which is not the post office creed. They don't have one. It was written on a ancient Persian building that served as a
postal office.
Yeah,
you told
just
me
a little,
about that.
Just a little trivia, but it's also inscribed on the post office in New York.
No, for the night is dark and full of terrors. That just sounds, I don't know.
It is like the standard issue prayer tagline for R'hllor worshippers.
Maybe I'm just remembering it from other than the show. Well, it's possible that I'm just remembering it from earlier on the show. But is it a Jewish prayer? Because, you know, in Star Wars, there is a prayer that, or it's not even a prayer, but there's something that Princess Leia says that is just taken directly from a Jewish prayer. Hmm. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope. There's some line in there that I can't remember it now, but it's exactly from.
Are you thinking of, it was a dark and stormy night?
No, that's Snoopy.
that's who I thought of. All right, well, let us know when you figure it out.
Okay, I will.
There was more mention of grayscale. Like, she says something about the stone men.
Right.
To which Tyrion has to respond, oh, good luck.
Carrying it with the prayers.
Does Tyrion speak High Valantian, Valerian, whatever, because of learning?
It must be Valerian they're speaking.
That was my thought.
Because he recognizes, obviously, what the...
Was it the direct...
What she's saying.
The Valerian guy who rubs his head, the dwarf for good luck. Right. But... I feel, yeah, like in the book, he says that exact same line, knowing that the guy probably doesn't understand the common tongue.
Well, it was hard to tell if he did or not. Yeah, he looked somewhat offended.
I think we will see that Red Priestess again, because the actress is recognizable.
Yeah, she's... I've seen her in something before.
I can't remember. I mean, she does some stuff. Does she do more than just give that speech in the books?
Yeah, that's all there is in the book.
That's all there is of her. Like it seemed like she had a lot to say about her mission in serving R'hllor.
And she kind of gives Tyrion a direct look. Like, ooh.
Isn't she basically telling the slaves of Volantis that the Mother of Dragons will come here and free these slaves, free you, like she freed the slaves in Meereen? So just be patient and
that's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Okay. So that's cool.
So they check out a brothel after that, get a little religion, and then go.
And that was a thing where, because we saw Ser Jorah in the, like, previously on Game of Thrones scenes,
right?
I knew he would be in that brothel.
Right.
I didn't think about it, but as soon as I saw the hand, I knew it was him. You know, his hand with the glass.
And then you see, so there's the Daenerys dressed up prostitute, right. And you kind of see him, like, give a little cringe, like, because that's like,
little cringe. He's tormented. Yeah.
What was the hesitation with Tyrion and the prostitute? I felt like it was something on her wrist or hand. He's holding her hand, looking at her hand or her arm or her body. Maybe I'm off, but there was something that gave him pause, and he said, "I can't. I wish I could, but I can't."
I think it's just because he's heartbroken over
Shay,
how things worked out with Shay.
Sad. He's off whores now? That's super sad.
He just couldn't do it. I mean, it's also possible he just really had to take a piss. I mean, like, I wish I could right now, but I have other things I need to do.
I'm surprised. More surprised than anyone.
I mean, let's see. In the book, he at least goes...
to a room?
Yeah. Maybe he stops short of having sex. Mm. I feel like he at least has some hesitations in the book, too.
He's been through a lot.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
So Jorah grabs him and declares, I'm taking you to the queen. So that's going to move things along. So we were speculating with Chris last week how much of Tyrion's journey to Meereen would play out like it does in the books. And they really skipped a whole cast of characters and series of events.
Right.
Just to cut to the point where... But Jorah does kind of kidnap him
in the books. That exactly happens. Just right.
So, I mean... That,
not really like that.
They're going to get to Meereen.
He doesn't behead him. I was glad for that. You know, because the price was for the head of... And that was demonstrated in last week's episode, I think, where someone brought the head of a dwarf and she looks at it and she's like...
Oh, I guess that's maybe meant to be more ambiguous, basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for the casual viewer... You know,
she didn't seem to be offended by, like, the extreme somebody went to.
But, I mean, what's your assumption? Which queen do you think he's taking him to?
Well, I thought about that, too, and it's not clear. Immediately, I thought of Cersei, but then I thought, well, he might not mean Cersei.
I mean,
I never thought he might mean Cersei.
Isn't it Cersei who has a price on his head?
Yeah. Even in the book,
yes. But that's not what his design is.
When you read the book, did you think Cersei? Oh,
fuck if I remember.
It could be.
Well, I mean, so Jorah loves Daenerys, and his clearest motivation would be to do something
to get back in her favor.
But he could just as easily get, like, you know. His original motivation before he fell in love with Daenerys was just to
be able to go back to Westeros.
So he could take Tyrion to King's Landing and accomplish that as well. But, well, I think we know what's going to happen there.
People in love don't like to be reasonable.
I mean, Ser Jorah knows that, or maybe suspects that Daenerys is getting it on with
Dario.
So, yeah, Ser Jorah might not want to be there when Dany is sitting on Dario's lap saying, oh, Jorah, what have you brought me? Okay, well, what do you think, gang?
I think we covered it all.
Any more fun speculations or ruminations?
What do we think about what we saw for next week? It looks a little... Looks like we're going to see some Dorne. We're going to see some more...
Yeah. A lot of...
Sons of the Harpy.
Dorne, several scenes.
Sons of the Harpy.
Some stuff in King's Landing, it looked like, with some people getting bloodied in the streets. I think that was King's Landing.
Well, and there was a lot. There were at least two distinct mentions of avenging your family. Jon Snow was given the opportunity to avenge his family. Sansa Stark was given the opportunity to avenge her family. And so I think we will see some avenging.
Okay, well, that's it for now. See you guys
next week.
Next week.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Thanks again, Kat.
Glad to have you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.